18.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
The second pick. The New York Jets select.
It'll be Zach Wilson, then all of a sudden Mac Jones, and then all of a sudden Justin Fields, and it'll be no, it's Zach Wilson. And then they'll take all the way down to 0 seconds, and everybody's going to be like, what the hell are they waiting for?
The Rich Eisen Show. Today's guests, five-time NBA All-Star Chris Webber, Fox Sports rules analyst Mike Pereira, plus, two-time Super Bowl champion, Chris Long. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. We've got a lot going on, to say the least, not just of what's just happened with the Elite Eight concluding last night. The Final Four is set. Also, in the NFL world, some big-time pro day performances going down, with some big-time pass catchers, Ja'Marr Chase and Kyle Pitts, the top wide receiver and tight end on the board in the upcoming draft that, as we know, last Friday was reconfigured with a bunch of trades. The NBA season is now nearing its last full month of the regular season. Mike Pereira, the head of NFL refs, when I was back when he was the head of NFL refs when I was hosting NFL Total Access all those years on NFL Network, he's now the NFL on Fox rules analyst. He'll talk about what new rules changes could be voted on by the NFL owners today. Chris Long, two-time Super Bowl champion, will be joining us in the third hour of this show to talk about the 17-game schedule, how players might be feeling about that, and other ancillary NFL pieces of news. On this show, I've got a sneaky good 17th games that just got created by the creation of a 17th game that not many people are talking about. New records to shoot for. I've got 17 game span records for some all-time benchmarks that players are going to be trying to achieve with a 17th game. That's how we're all rolling. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. There's also some Deshaun Watson news to tell you about this hour. But right now, I'll turn to one of my favorite people on the planet. When I have this show, the fact that I have him on as a regular guest and able to call him a friend when he was such a delight for me and gave me so much enjoyment, not only in his professional career, but as a member of the Fab Five at the University of Michigan, Chris Webber here on the Rich Eisen Show. How are you, Chris?
Hey, good. How you doing, Rich?
I got to tell you, I'll be honest. I thought you and I would be having a much happier reason to celebrate right now when I said, hey, would you like to come on the show? I'll be very honest with you. I had a different plan for this chat, but such is life, huh?
Yeah, I was ready to talk a bunch of stuff, that was a tough one. I thought, you know, honestly, when we were up a few points, it's so much better to be a fan for me than to rooting for Juwan and to kind of go through it, because the whole time, you know, I'm just nonchalant. I'm like, oh, yeah, we're up 13. We're about to win or 9. You know, I'm just focused and everything. And then, yeah, man, the end of the night, I got Reggie Miller, Baron Davis, Matt Barnes, Trace Murray.
That's right.
Oh. All those jerks hitting me, and I owe some charities some money, man. I owe some charities some money.
Is so that right?
Helping people through it.
Is what? So I'm loath to ask, but what does a Reggie Miller text look like?
Let me read it to you.
Okay, please.
Hold on one second,
Chris Webber.
So
okay, no problem. It's okay.
First of all, it starts off with. I said, hey, Rez, do you want a friendly wager or charity or anything? You know, I know. I said, Reggie, do you have a charity or anything you want to know? He
right.
goes, yeah, I have some good charities that take Michigander's money.
Okay.
This is easy. This is going to be easy. UCLA the greatest. I send him a couple of memes that aren't really good and some hands and finger gestures. And
yes.
Then I turned off my phone after we lost, right? And then all I got last night, I wake up and it's about 30 messages from him. And just let me say this. If you think he talked junk against the New York Knicks and Spike Lee, that's nothing. that's nothing as compared to what's on my phone. So I take my medicine like a man, though.
You know what? I hear you. I hear you. And so what did UCLA do, based on what you're seeing and what you know that I'm sure Juwan was seeing? What did they do to force Michigan out of its usual game last night.
You know what? I haven't talked to Juwan yet. I texted him. I was on with Ray Jackson last night during the whole game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was just saying Ray's comments for that. He just thought we missed a lot of shots that we would normally miss. And there's some free throws and that, you know, kind of our decision-making at times wasn't the same that it had been all year. You know, very honestly, I think we have a great team, and we should have won last night, and I had us to win the championship. So it's no excuses, all that. Juwan's a big boy. But at the same time, you know, I do think the team played better than they were all year long. Like the collective sum of their parts made them great. And it's hard, like, when you achieve so much and you're 1 point from going to the Final Four, to, you know, look back and say, you know, honestly, we shouldn't even have been this far, you know. And what I mean by that is every day in the Big Ten, the toughest conference, even though they didn't show it in the tournament, but just staying focused all year, playing above, to me, doing the little things, the rebounding, staying together, not turning the ball over. And so, to me, I commend them just on a hell of a year, because I'm focused on two things. As a fan, I'm so disappointed. 1 point, we should have won. We didn't play our best. Oh, man, it's the worst. And then at the same time, I wouldn't have thought we would have had this great of a season, you know, without Juwan being able to have, you know, all of his recruits and the whole season finish last year. This is truthfully his real first season. And so I'm proud of him and what he's done. And I'm definitely proud of those young men, because they worked their butts off all year. And I hope that, you know, when the pain leaves, you know, they'll you know, recalibrate and understand that, you know, in life, all you have to do or all you can do is give your all. If you do that, you know, you're good, and I know that they gave more than their all. So I'm proud of the young man.
Chris Webber, NBA on TNT, and obviously one of the all-time greats here on the Rich Eisen Show. So one thing, though, let's stick on the positive here, is Juwan Howard has proven this guy is a terrific coach. He is not only a terrific motivator, he knows how to game plan, and he knows how to push the right buttons in a game. And he has shown that, boy, did everybody miss out. And thank goodness the alma mater went in his direction. And I'm wondering if, it, you know, and obviously what Patrick Ewing did this year as well at Georgetown. Do you think we might see, as we saw Mike Woodson get hired at Indiana, even though he has no college experience. But do you think Juwan might be leading along with maybe Patrick? Sort of an idea here that players don't need a lot of head coaching experience in order to be a head coach of note, certainly in the collegiate level. Do you think, Chris?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's a resurgence. I think it's just guys that aren't point guards, maybe. You know, you look at Steve Alford, he was hired. You know, you look at guys like, guys have been hired, you know, and
so
everybody's in an uproar. Yeah, not big man. Everybody's in an uproar about Mike Woodson, and it's so funny because I go, the only thing I think about Mike Woodson is, who is he hiring that's younger than him to talk to kids and let them know Mike Woodson had a great career? like that's it, because he can coach just as good. Like, it's, you know, if you're a coach or you're a player, you work with kids younger than yourself. You know, I can't imagine how many kids I've spoken to or at a camp or how many camps I've had. Or that when you put a good crew around yourself and you're the CEO of that, I mean, it's hard for it not to work if you're a hard-working player. And so just as we respect the Eric Spoelstras, and we should, because Eric Spoelstras is a hell of a coach, just as we respect him because his story is starting off in the film room, I think there's been some anti-bias against players saying, you know, I remember, you know, what everybody said when Steve Kerr got the job, or before him, Mark Jackson got the job, or even when Doc Rivers got the job. You know, how could he just come from playing a coach? Because he was a point guard. What are you talking about? Coaches used to come to him to ask him, what should he do? The best coaches. So, you know, hopefully it's just the understanding that there's a balance. You don't have to play basketball to know this game as well as Michael Jordan. You can study the game and get it. But also, you know, if you've played the game, then you don't need to go through the traditions, so to speak, to walk your way up. Playing in the league 19 years for Juwan, I would suspect he could coach a team.
So, and just in terms of, again, what Juwan can bring to the table, Chris, I did notice that when Michigan got not one, not two, but three McDonald's All-American recruits to say yes, Juwan tweeted them, "Welcome to the club." And he didn't mean Michigan athletics. He meant, hey, you know, I'm an All-American too. Like I was, right. You know, like he has that ability to do such a thing. And I love that. I absolutely love that. You know,
yeah.
And we brought that up with him. And the other thing we brought up with him before we move on here, Chris, is TJ Jefferson, my social media grandmaster, who's on the set here, brought up to him. Go ahead. What did you bring up to Juwan?
Oh, what up, Chris? First and foremost,
hey, what's up? Wait, what's your full name now? What's the whole nickname? Because I know you, but I didn't know the full Meister. What did you just say?
The social media grandmaster.
Okay, that's okay. What's up, brother? How you doing?
It's been a minute. Or as Chris Berman has nicknamed me, TJ, moving on up Jefferson. Okay,
but I like that.
So, Chris, you know, when you were here last time, you and I were talking about the McDonald's game that was in Pitt, or the Dapper Dan game rather, that was in Pittsburgh, and you know, I got to speak to Juwan, and I said I was a little taken aback by the fact that you, as the Fab Five, you created this look with the long shorts, the baggy unis, the black socks, the black shoes. But now these kids nowadays, bro, those shorts are creeping up the thigh. And a term I used with Juwan was, there's way too much thigh meat going on, C-Web. I ain't really with it. I mean, the Fab Five didn't go through all you went through, all the trash that people talk to you guys about being thugs and this and that, to rock the long shorts that now have them reverting backwards and creeping up to the top of the thigh. I ain't with it, Chris. I ain't with it.
Hey, see, that's the problem with kids these days. No, you know, it's funny, though, in forging the way and doing things that people didn't like when we did it, we got to respect what they're doing. So, yeah, now they're just wearing spandex. They're like, just now they're not even wearing shorts. They're wearing the spandex we used to wear under our shorts.
Right, the compression shorts.
Crazy, but when they have kids, it's going to get back to baggy, man. Hopefully this is just a bad fashion era, like, you know, the early 80s or something.
We can only hope.
Yeah, because honestly, we can't have your progress getting rolled back.
No.
We cannot have
And
that.
Juwan wasn't happy with it either.
He was pissed.
It's not a good look, man. It is not a good look. But hopefully it don't only handles, you know, 1 or 2, 3 years, but they all need to give Stockton a little bit of praise.
True.
They still in Stockton style.
he never succumbed to the pressure of the long short.
No. Yeah. Never. So before I let you go, Chris, we're entering April. The Lakers are banged up. They do get Andre Drummond. And I think, does somebody need to tell Durant that he's not choosing an all-star team anymore, that was just him versus LeBron? Because it sure looks like the Nets are taking advantage of the buyout scenario here. What do you think of that? It strikes me as something that the NBA needs to somehow rectify in a way to not have a super team created mid-season even. Chris.
Yeah, sorry about that. I hung up on you there.
Oh, no problem. Sorry. I don't know if you heard my whole preamble right there. Did you hear me?
I didn't, but I think you were talking about Brooklyn with a super team.
Yeah, I mean, what do you – to me, does the NBA need to do – I don't know what they do, because it sounds like a different type of load management problem that you really can't fix. But it's kind of a bit of a bummer here, Chris, that a team gets to create a super team in the middle of the season.
Now you're my friend, but I got to ask you something.
Okay, Chris.
Are you just being biased? Did you feel this way when Golden State went and got Durant?
Well, they got Durant through one free agent move during the offseason. It's not like that you're going to wait for a bunch of teams to not pay stars and put them out on the market and then just put them all together. You know what I mean? Like Harden, they actually gave up capital for. It just I don't begrudge ring chasing by players either. I get it, but it just seems to me it's just like, you know. I don't know.
You're an old school fan like myself. Like, we like rooting for teams and rooting against teams. And if you beat us, you know, then you beat us rooting against you. You like seeing guys like go through a bad playoff and then get questioned and then come back and doing it again. You're a football guy, basketball guy. Like, I'm with you. And I've stopped thinking of, like, you're gonna lose sleep at night, man. You're gonna lose sleep. You're not gonna enjoy the game if you think that way, because I'm with you, and I've had to let that go, man. It's crazy because you want that, but and it is unfair. And because I tell you what, I really am honest with you. I think Brooklyn, it depends on health. I think Brooklyn and the Lakers. But no one talks about this. I think the Rasheed Wallace means the guy that got that went to a team that's going to win a championship is DeAndre Drummond. The Lakers will win a championship with DeAndre Drummond if LeBron and AD are healthy because he rebounds. He's the 2020 guy. He doesn't need the ball. He plays well on defense. So you're right. I'm seeing it all, and it made more sense for him to go to New York where he could get more money and do things. So I'm with you, Rich. I just and think about it. The league probably loves it because now we have, you know, four super teams, and I still think a team like Utah can sneak in there and That'd do it, great. Even though the other two are better. So I'm with you, man. I just think if we're going to go crazy if we try to have logic as fans saying it should be played this way.
All right.
Team shouldn't be able to do it.
Chris Weber, I love you, man. One of our favorite fans of the show, Jeff in Detroit, said, what up? He just called up before the end of the last game.
What up, Doe?
What up, Doe?
I'm sorry, I left out the Doe. I'm sorry.
One thing, Rich. I just got to say this.
Please.
Matthew Stafford, wherever you are, man, I love you. That's my quarterback.
I was about to ask you what you thought about.
To win it all.
So you're,
and that's not even my team.
So you're taking the Rams now? Are you following Stafford to the Rams, or you have less faith in your Lions? I mean, No.
Okay. Well, me and the Lions, that's a whole other issue. But You know, I love my Lions. But you know, I'm focused, and I try to be a fan that's not too, you know, over the top.
Sure.
But you know, watch what Joey does. I'm telling everybody doubted him. He didn't. He only had 2,000 yard runners. What are you talking about with him with the play action? Oh, y'all wait. Y'all watch. All of y'all that doubted. It's not even about the Lions. Everybody out there that doubted my quarterback. That's my quarterback. Watch. Watch what he do. That's all I have to say.
Chris Weber.
All right.
As T.O.
All right.
So play us out. Thanks for the call, Chris. I appreciate it. I wish we were celebrating as opposed to commiserating. But I, as always, love your work on TNT. When's your next game? You'll be doing
my next game's tomorrow, and we have Charlotte at Brooklyn.
Okay.
And as I text my man Juwan, you know, I'm proud of him. We're disappointed, but this is just the first step. Imagine what else is on the way.
I love it.
This is just the first step for us, baby. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, C-Web. You be well. That's Chris Weber,
Chris.
Everybody. NBA on TNT's Chris Weber. Charlotte at Brooklyn.
Hey, now.
That was put on the docket when LaMelo was healthy.
Probably.
Right?
Yeah, probably. Such a bummer he's out.
I know. And Brooklyn, is LaMarcus Aldridge still in the, 3-week Blake Griffin conditioning program? Or is he going to play in that one? Are we going to see the full complement of the Team Durant? They should just call themselves Team Durant, right? Seriously. It's like he's still choosing the All-Star game. It's Team Durant versus the Charlotte Hornets on the NBA on TNT tomorrow night.
Super Team 3.
We'll ask that of Ian Eagle when he joins us on Friday's show.
Yes.
As Ian Eagle's calls of the NCAA tournament games and the Nets will be front and center, as will his fantastic reads for Cherry Vanilla Soda. Let's take a break. Mike Pereira will be joining us next. NFL on Fox Rules analyst Mike Pereira. I will be hounding him about the pylon rule through the end zone as well. This is going to be entertaining, folks.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen. America starts the day with America in the morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
We're back here on our Rich Eisen Show radio network. Before we get to Mike Pereira, a huge breaking news out of the Florida Pro Day. My Twitter timeline just exploded, as did my phone. Football on a stick has just made its appearance at the Florida Pro Day. And as you know, that is my favorite part of the combine, when you mimic the snap of the football for defensive drills, and there's a football on the end of the stick, and somebody just pulls the stick and it mimics the snapping of the football. There's nothing I enjoy more at the combine than football on a stick.
So dumb. And
it is not dumb, Chris. It's very it's actually quite utile. It's actually quite simple. Sometimes the greater things in life are simple, and you know.
You're right.
And I'm always right, as you know, around
here.
For instance, who was right about the tuck rule all those years? Who's right now about fumbling through the end zone?
You're definitely not.
It should be. You know who knows that more than anybody else? Mike Pereira, former head of NFL refs, now NFL on Fox rules analyst. How are you, Mike?
You know, I'm really good, but I'm looking through all the proposals that the owners are going to discuss.
Yes.
And I'm looking at, you know, remove the on-field video review from the replay process, make all illegal forward passes loss of down.
Yeah.
All of these things. It's funny, I don't see anything about a fumble forward into the end zone.
Yes, thing. I see that, Mike.
Preach, Mike.
Excuse me. Now, Mike, you're now cherry picking which information to give us. And I'm not accusing you of wrongfully saying that this is not up for review. You know the way this works. You've been in the competition committee room. You know how it works. You know that teams understand what would even remotely come close to passing muster or not. You know whether it's ready to be put in front of ownership now or not. You know how this works. And they just don't feel that it's ready. They don't have the proper wording or ruling or even maybe consensus in the room. But I think you and I both know it's coming. We know it's coming, Mike. We know it, right?
I'll grant you, we did say that about the tuck rule. You did say that about the tuck rule. So I will give you that. And there's something to me that like reflects Eisen when you look at all these proposals. Eisen. It's like if you put, like, in front of me, a plan about overtime and the toss, and if you put in front of me pick and choose, and you said, who would have proposed something like that? I would have said Rich Eisen.
That's right, damn straight.
More than John Harbaugh, to tell you the truth.
Exactly, Mike. And by the way, who also came up to you at the owners' meeting years ago? I believe it was in Tampa, Florida, where, you know, they were changing the rules on celebration, and you were right. You were rightfully saying that you had, as the head of NFL refs, the number of letters you got from high school and Pop Warner coaches saying you need to fix this in the pros because we're seeing it too much here. They're looking at the pros. But who told you that it was too stringent and that there would be some sort of reversal of this rule on celebrations? Who told you that back then, Mike? Who was the one to tell you that?
That would be you. That would be you.
So I'm just saying I am a seer. I'm an understander. Of the room, I read the temperature, I take the figurative pulse. Tell me this pylon rule is never going to be changed. Tell me that, Mike Pereira. Tell me that.
The pylon rule?
Yes.
It's a wonderful rule. It's easy. It's easily understandable now. You know, if you're inbounds and go into the end zone, then that goal line extends. If you're not, you got to get the ball over the pylon before you touch out of bounds. It's a beautiful rule.
Right.
It's a beautiful rule. But there are a lot bigger issues in the game
than the fumbling. No, I know that. I get the fumbling through the end zone. I hear that from you. I've heard that from all your successors at the job that it happens, what, 5-10 times a year. It just happens always in a nationally televised game, and it's gonna happen in a Super Bowl, Mike. And the whole country is gonna say, "What the hell was that?" And then we're really gonna have a mess on our hands. I guarantee you. This will happen if we don't fix this rule. And my rule change would be you fumble through the end zone, reverse touchback, keep the same down. So if you fumble on third down, it's a loss of down, but back at the 20-yard line. So at least somebody's got a chance to kick a field goal from the 20-yard line on fourth down. If it happens on first down, and yeah, too bad, it's first and goal. It's now second and goal from the 20-yard line. What's wrong with that? You keep possession. What's wrong with that?
Nothing's wrong with that. But again, you know, I'm like all of my successors are the guys that followed me, the whole ball of wax, the guys before me. When you fumble the ball into your opponent's end zone, to me, it's worse than fumbling the ball forward out of bounds. That's just the way I feel about that. And I hate this thought of, I don't hate the thought because it's you, but I hate the thought of, you know, fumbling forward out of bounds, and now you take the ball that was snapped at the 3 and fumbled at the 2 and put it at the 20. You know, to me, you got to play football. And to me, hold on to the ball. You want to stretch your arm out, stretch your hand to try to get into the end zone and risk losing control of the ball? That's your risk. But to me, I don't think that's part of the major problem that we have in officiating and rules today.
Mike Pereira here on the Rich Eisen Show. What are the major problems in officiating and rules today that you think needs to be fixed?
Well, I think when you look at what's being talked about, you know, the addition of a booth official, however you want to call it, I think that's the biggest possible step to improve officiating on the field. I don't like the way that I'm hearing that it's being presented, which is unlike what Baltimore presented, which is an 8th official who has access to video, who is off the field, and who can contribute in real time to the crew. I like that. Call it the sky judge. It has been tried before in the AAF, the whatever it was, and the XFL. It's doable. It can correct egregious errors. It can be limited to personal fouls, player safety issues, and for, like, pass interference inside of, let's say, 5 minutes of the fourth quarter. But to me, what they're talking about is giving the replay official more responsibility, to me, opens up a lot of problems. And I think the replay official has enough to do right now. And I think the key to me is an 8th official just rules on things that are outside of replay, not the inside of replay stuff on what's a catch and what's not a catch. You know, did he step on the line? Did he not? You're talking about, was that a face mask? Was it roughing the passer? Was it a hit on an illegal hit on a receiver? Those types of player safety things, which to me can be done efficiently. I don't believe it will extend the length of games by a whole lot, and again, it has to be limited. Not looking at whether something's a delay, a game foul, whether the play clock ran out, or whether the right guard fault started. You know, just the big issue plays. And I think if our goal is to get better, and our goal is not to have missed calls, then I think that's the answer. But not the replay official trying to decide quickly whether something's a catch or not a catch and correct it and not go to review, and then the poor coaches on the sidelines and their guys upstairs, well, they're going to wait to see, is replay going to change this immediately, or it's fraught with problems. So I think that's one of the big issues that will be actually decided upon, because I do think something will happen.
So yeah, you're hearing that they're going to try and just add more responsibilities to a replay official as opposed to add someone else. And the verbiage I'm hearing is that this replay official that would have expanded responsibilities as a de facto sky judge would be involved in subjective issues. That's the words that I'm hearing, or that could be utilized as a as a codification, as a an actual rule that's put in there. What do you think that would be? Do you think this has a chance of passing?
Well, I think certainly there's a chance that something is going to pass, and I'm hearing more of the expansion of the replay official. Look, you're not going to go to a sky judge or an eighth official unless you get the total support of the officiating department. If I was still running the department, I would be in the committee meeting saying, this is what I want to do. So I look at this whole thing of being subjective with the replay official. Look, the replay official doesn't even make any decisions now. All decisions are made in New York. So if he's going to be he's got to make a subjective decision. Are we going to wait for New York to make that subjective decision? It's like, wait a minute, where is the process here? Where's the process? And so, you know, I look at this and saying you're going to expand the duties of the replay official, who in many cases hasn't even worked a game of football or hasn't certainly worked in the NFL. Are we going to give them this responsibility, or does poor Al Riveron get more responsibility in New York? There's no way that New York they're going to see every roughing the passer hit, for example, and make a decision on whether it's a correct call or one that should have been called or one that's incorrect. I mean, it's just there's too many layers there. And I just think that the issue of an eighth official, and while I like John Harbaugh's and Baltimore's, you know, proposal, I don't feel like they went far enough. I mean, there has to be, you can't just say, this is what we ought to do. How can we do it? And to me, how could we get an eighth official? And who is this eighth official? And if it's me, I say, hey, we're going to bring in 18 new officials, and each crew is going to be an eight-member crew, and we're going to rotate. We're going to rotate. Let's not tunnel vision everybody that this is your position. This is the only one you can work. Take the three deep officials and move them every fourth game into this into the booth. I think it would improve officiating. It would get more officials into the program and get them started. So we always seem, and I was the same, we try to make things better by putting Band-Aids on things and on problems or on sores or on scrapes, when the big way to really make a big difference to me, and what we refuse to talk about with any great length, is full-time officials. Do referees need to be full-time? Which I certainly believe they do. The 17 referees, 100% full-time, working every day of the football season under one roof during the week. And then again, this eighth official using real time. It happens now. You see a block in the back called, and then all of a sudden the officials get together and they pick up the flag. You see a face mask called, the officials get together and they pick up the flag because another official has another view. Here's the eighth official with another view that he gets the luxury of seeing the live shot and run it back and forth and a quick replay. And if they can get it within a 15-second time frame, within 15 seconds left on the play clock, if they can get it done before that, then make the change. It'll look funny, but you know what? Replay looked funny when we brought it in, but everybody got used to it. Well, and it would be the same here.
Mike Pereira here on the Rich Eisen Show. As you know, I was there for the owners' meeting where it was ruled as permanent, and I remember Charlie Casherly of the Texans organization at the time, and he was on the competition committee. He told the owners, everybody has replay at home. Everybody's got it in high definition. If we don't use it, you know, everyone else is seeing it. So it, yeah. You know, that's why I'm always been an advocate of replay. And so, but you know how this works. It's everything needs to be done incrementally because there's so many people that just can't wrap their heads around such a radical change. And then there's also some other aspects of moving things back to where they once were. There's a certain part of NFL membership that just thinks that we're, you know, anything that's changing from the old way of doing it, or the if you will, long time way of doing it, is something that they have a problem with. Why am I hearing that overtime rules need to go back to what it was, where it's just like, let's flip the coin and somebody goes, you know, six plays, kicks a field goal, and we're done? Why am I hearing that? Where did that come from?
Mike? I don't know, and I don't agree with that at all.
Neither did I.
I mean, I agree with what we got to. There are certain people that think it should go further than that, and that even on a touchdown that the other team should get an opportunity. But I think it was a good, you know, a good change, and I think it's good the way it is. Again, I'd move beyond that and say, where's our issue here when we look at the onside kick situation?
Right.
You know, to me, you look at that and say, here's some startling numbers. I mean, the success rate on onside kicks from 2010 to 17 was 13.5%, and from 2018 through 2020, it was 7.8%, and in 2020 alone, it was 4.8%. And then the whole notion of, if you go back and look at this, how about this stat? Between the two-minute warning and 3 minutes remaining in the fourth quarter, a team that was down 1 to 8 points attempted onside kicks 42.1% of the time. In 2020, 8.3% of the time.
Well, that's a player safety issue, isn't it, Mike, because of the way that you're allowed to line up for a kickoff?
I think it's not – yeah, it's not just lining up. And, of course, it's a player safety issue. I get it. But it's the restriction on being able to advance.
Right.
So you have to be flat-footed, basically,
right,
when the ball is kicked. And that's probably the biggest limiting thing to me. And so I think you have to look at that. It's time to look at that.
What's the fix?
Whole fourth and 15 onside kick alternative, I think, is a good one.
And so what if you could wave a wand and make that happen, what would that look like to you, Mike?
Well, it would be very simple. After you score a touchdown, the team would be given the opportunity to say, do you want a kickoff? Do you want an onside? And if you're going to onside, it's a fourth and 15 attempt. So we play football. You snap the ball to 25, and you play, it's 4th and 15. If you get it to the 40 on the play, guess what? You keep the ball and continue playing. If you have fouls on the play,
yes,
we play it just like a 4th and 15. So you don't make it to the 40-yard line, but the defense is offside, then you get another down, and it's 4th and 10 from the 30.
What if there's a hold? What if there's an automatic first down or pass interference?
You get it. If there's an automatic first down, you play on. So you just basically play 4th and 15. Now, the danger, I think, is the straight play that is unsuccessful. So you throw the pass, and it's incomplete. Boy, now the other team gets the ball first and 10 at the 25. Now that's almost a gimme for another score, where at least in the traditional onside kick thing, if you kick from the 35, the other team is probably going to get the ball to 45. But now they're going to get it, at the 25. So that's a big difference. But you're going to have to do something to, I think, make it a better opportunity for the team to come back in the game. Now, a 4th and 15 on itself, boy, the success rate's not very good on just a straight play without penalty or anything. It's about 2.5%. But with penalties and everything, it certainly increases. But I think there has to be an alternative, and I think there's been enough research done that I do think it'd be more of an exciting play for people to watch. And again, it brings in the whole notion of the penalty situation, which just makes a play like football.
Mike, you're the man. Let's chat in the next couple of weeks when we know exactly what's been done and what you think the unintended consequences or the proper consequences are. Let's do that again soon. Okay.
Anytime.
Thanks for the call. You're the man. That's Mike Pereira, chief rules analyst on Fox. I like the 4th and 15, man, and I don't want to touch overtime. I don't want to touch overtime. Don't touch it. If you were going to do anything, make it longer. I understand that player safety and you're going 17 games, you know, they put it back down to 10 minutes as opposed to 15 minutes, so you're limiting the number of possessions. You're increasing the opportunity for ties.
Yep. We've seen a lot more ties in the last few
years. I know that. But the player safety aspect is you can't, you know, because they found out so many concussions happen on kickoffs because you're allowed to run up to the line of scrimmage and go run down, and they crash together in the middle of the field like Braveheart.
Yeah.
And so they decided you can't run up to the line of scrimmage. You have to be flat-footed, and you have to line up on certain sides of the ball. Certain numbers have to be on either side of the ball and go. And so that's destroyed the onside kick. It's clear. They've destroyed the onside kick. Yep. And they got to figure something out on that. Because you do have to have an opportunity if you're down by
for
two scores. Yeah, keep me interested. Yeah. Keep me tuned.
Yeah. It's all about red zone. Red zone, red zone, red zone. What's going to keep the vibes?
So when we come back, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a look at some records. A lot of people are saying with a 17-game schedule, the record books are going to be completely thrown up in the air. And how can we decide what is a greatest all-time season or not? Are we going to take a look before week 17? Hey, somebody's got 16 games of this number in, and that would have been a record, but we can't say it's a record anymore.
Yeah.
Because there's a 17th game, and what are you going to do? So what I've done is I had NFL Network Research come up with best 17-game spans ever in four statistical categories that I think you should keep as your mind's eyes. This is the new benchmark to shoot for. And then in the next hour with Chris Long as well, former NFL player, two-time Super Bowl champion, we'll talk about some sneaky good 17th games. 844-204-RICH is also the number to dial. We'll take your calls.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
We're back here on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. All right, let's quickly take a phone call here. Brandon in Utah. What's up, Brandon? How you been?
How we doing, Rich?
What's going on? What's on your mind?
I got a suggestion for your fumbling through the end zone here.
What do you got for me?
Okay, I think if the ball goes past the end zone, the back line, the offense does not get the ball back. DK Metcalf celebrating, getting the ball knocked out, going out of the end zone, he shouldn't get the ball back. But a couple years ago, ironically, C.J. Mosley intercepts the Jets, goes to run it back in. He intercepts the Jets. They're on like a 10-yard line. I think Mosley caught the ball around the 20. He fumbles the ball going into the end zone, and it goes out of the sideline. The Jets get rewarded 10 yards for throwing an interception. How does that work?
You know what? here's the thing, and I like this, Brandon. I'm gonna incorporate it into my idea that if it goes through the back end line, that's when it goes to the defense. If it goes through the sidelines,
offense gets it at the 20.
Correct, just like it went out of bounds before the pylon. I like it a lot.
Ironically, it was Mosley against the Jets. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know.
About that.
No, at least he played a game in which the Jets were actually playing, right?
Oh my gosh. They weren't playing that well.
I know that. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Sorry, Rich Eisen.
At least the Jets were playing on a game day and C.J. Mosley was in the game.
Right.
Don't get me started. I like it right there. That might be a good fix.
No. The fix is not changing the rule. You're just trying to change something for the sake of changing it.
Got it.
Got it.
So a lot of folks are not too thrilled about the 17-game season as a fan because it's just like the whole record books since 1978 are out. And I'm wondering if when in 78 they expanded it from 14 games to 16 regular season games, people will be like, what about the record books? And we haven't thought about the record books at all from before 1978. So maybe one day people won't be talking about it. But right now they are. Yes. So I reached out to Brandon Mendoza and the great NFL Network Research Group, and thank you for these numbers. I said, give me the best 17-game stretch in NFL history for these four categories, most receptions, most yards receiving, most passing yards, and most rushing yards. And these will be the new benchmarks. So give me the best stretch of anybody over 17 games. And he said it's not for best – it's not for individual games – it's for the team games. So if somebody missed a game in between, it doesn't count against them, right? Again, right. 17 games played for a team. Give me that stretch at any point over obviously two seasons. Here we go. These are your new benchmarks. So most receptions. You got music for me, Mike Del Tufo? Most receptions. Michael Thomas had 161 receptions over a 17-game stretch between 2018 and 2019, in which he had the record for most reception yards in a season, 149. So the new mark is now 161 for a 17-game season. So try and beat that mark coming up in the 2021 season. What about most receiving yards? Well, interestingly enough, Calvin Johnson's got the 16-game record. He's also got the 17-game record. 2,238. He had over the 2011 and 2012 season. In 2012, he set the single-season record, 1,964 yards. So add a few more on. It's now 2,238 yards is your 17-game record to shoot for if you're a wide receiver in the league. Calvin Johnson and Michael Thomas, interestingly enough, have both the 16 and now new 17-game records. Okay. Most passing yards in a season. Interestingly enough, Peyton Manning has the most passing yards in a regular season, 16 games. In 2013, he had 5,477. He's got the record for 17-game stretch. In 2012 and 2013, in which he had the single-season record, 5,854.
Wow.
He had 5,477 in 2013. By the way,
man.
Beating Drew Brees by a single yard. Brees had 5,476 in 2011. He had 5,477 in 2013. So the new mark is 5,854 yards. So pretty much try for a 6,000-yard season to beat him.
Which Dak, I think, was on pace for, right?
Right, in 17 games.
Might have been 7,000.
And here's the 16-game rushing record, single season, as we all know, it's Eric Dickerson, 2,105 rushing yards. Would he have the 17-game record stretch? The best 17-game stretch in the history of the NFL rushing the football belongs to the great Earl Campbell.
Earl Campbell.
Who in 1980 through 81 had 2,408 rushing yards. That's your new 17-game single season record. Now, obviously, somebody sitting out there go, well, why don't you give me the benefit of doing it outside of two seasons as well?
Sure.
Too bad. It's now a 17-game regular season.
So
I just want to give you a concept of the best 17-game stretch that's ever been had by a single person through a 17-game by their team stretch. There you have it.
Which one falls first?
I think it's got to be passing yards. I'd go passing yards.
Got to be passing yards, right?
I go passing yards. Rushing, could you imagine 2,404? Go for it, Derrick Henry. Yeah, that's why he's doing all those moving push-ups.
Yeah, right. Yep. Like squatting.
I'd go passing yards. Food for thought, everybody. Just want to give you food for thought. Chris Long is going to be joining us next hour, two-time Super Bowl champion. What do you think about playing 17 games, period, and that so much more coming up?